Propagating truth in a world of lies. You are listening to the John Age Project.
Trust no one. Trust no one. Trust no one.
You have entered into the Anomic Age, and I am indeed your host, John Age. Thank you for joining us today on the program. And it is hot, hot here in North Carolina. So if you're in a cool climate, I am very envious of you. I don't even venture outside much. It's so ridiculously hot and humid. Ridiculously. You need gills out here to exist in this sort of habitat. Either way, thank you for joining us on the broadcast today. We got a great show for you today. As you might expect, nothing new, just the best here in the Anomic Age. But before we get into any of that, please make sure you check out AnomicAge.com. Share that link with your friends, family, loved ones, and enemies. We got a lot of guests coming up. It's going to be a great, hopefully, a great few months. Not that it hasn't already been so. But it'll definitely improve, if that's possible, in the Anomic Age. So make sure you share those show links. Share them on your Instagram, Twitter, Reddit, Facebook, whatever you use. I try to limit my intake of all that stuff. To be honest, in the last few days, I've really limited my intake on it. It's so much to handle. And I've noticed, much like when I was younger, I noticed when I was listening to all hardcore and all like heavy punk all the time, it took me like 10 or 12 years to figure out, hey, that's probably not a good idea. Like, no wonder you're extremely angry constantly and just wanting to, you know, it's not good. Same thing holds true today. If you're looking at nothing but the news feed constantly, yes, it can take a negative effect on your life. So sometimes you got to detox. You know, it was last week, it was that, I tried to block her name out, the soccer idiot that was on for like a week straight. And this week, it's the Muslim idiot on for like a week straight. So the news cycles are kind of funny that way. You know, once something is in vogue in the news, they will ram it down your proverbial throat for a week or so straight, and then it'll drop off the radar completely, and you'll hear nothing about it again. So, in the last few weeks, I've limited myself. Don't worry, I'm still keeping track of it. I'm just not looking at it for hours on end, because you can't. It just doesn't help you. It didn't help you at all last week and the week before to look at that soccer fool degrading the flag and the president and the country. And it's the same thing this week. It's just the person with the... with the headgear that's doing it this week. So it seems to be the same narrative, no matter what week it is, or day or hour it is. It's the same narrative. Evil white conservative men. Evil America. Evil conservative. Evil Christian. It's all evil. Unless you're on the communist side of the fence. And then it's all right. It's all relative. It's all okay. It's all that Frankfurt School. It's all right. Accept, embrace, and just love the diversity. As long as you're the right diversity. That's the key to the communists. So, before I get off on a jag, it turns into like a two-hour stint. Let me pull the reins back a little bit and just say, hey, AnomicAge.com. You can find it on iTunes, Instagram. Actually, not on Instagram. Excuse me. I take that back. We're signed up for Instagram. I just don't use this stinking thing. I got too much other stuff going on. Sorry. I feel that I have no pictures to contribute to Instagram. I get it. Yeah, you can market your show that way. And I'm sure I would, I don't know, have a rash of whole new followers from Instagram perhaps. But I don't know. Just don't. I primarily stick to Twitter. That's pretty much the only outlet that you can find me on contributing to in any sort of regular fashion. is on Twitter. I sort of just post the show information on Facebook. I try to limit my exposure on there as much as possible. I can't stand it. To be honest, I hate YouTube as well. But some of these things are just a necessary evil. If you have any sort of platform akin to mine and want to get an audience larger than a couple guys once or twice a month, then you kind of have to put yourself out there a bit. And that's the only reason I'm on any of these platforms. But I digress. AnomicEdge.com, friends, family, loved ones, and enemies. You can find the PayPal link there because please send me your money. It's an old Suicidal Tendency song, but it's quite a humorous reference as well. But in all seriousness, yeah, I could use some funds to keep this program afloat. So please, feel free. PayPal.me/AnomicEdge, or you can just go to AnomicEdge.com. On the bottom right, you can find that same PayPal link, and you too can donate to the AnomicEdge. Because this whole thing's not cheap. I just had to pay another bill this past week, and then another one 2 weeks before that, and another one probably a week before that. It's a never-ending litany of bills. It's so bizarre. Even on a platform as small as this one, I couldn't imagine comparing that to some of the bigger, larger, million-reaching platforms. I don't know how they pay for it. Well, I do know how they pay for it. They get a whole lot of funding from listeners, I hope. But yeah, that's kind of what we need around here as well. I never envisioned that it costs this much to get even this sort of meager platform off the ground until I really started getting in there. And when you start doing this, that, and the other, it mounts up quick. And that's a sort of end of the year docket of how much you spent is, wow, it's crazy. You know, you're thinking, oh, I just bought some cords and some cables and paid for this server and paid for that tech support. And before you know it, you've reached quite a large sum of monies. So please donate. PayPal.me/AnomicEdge or from the old homepage, AnomicEdge.com. I know you're sharing it with everyone. Thank you. But a little quan is always nice as well. Anyway, before we get off onto anything else, because there's a whole lot of things swimming in my brain constantly, and I just keep randomly pulling this and pulling that, and I have a lot to talk about. Always a lot to talk about. Sooner or later, I'm going to do a show where it's just me talking again with no guest, because we haven't done that in a long time. I got a lot on my mind. But let's just stick with the news, shall we, of the day? There's so much to get into. I don't even know where to begin. I say that quite often, and then I know exactly where to begin, actually. This is from BigLeaguePolitics.com. From the author, this is Tom Peppert. Joe Biggs, : Antifa's Molotov cocktails are why we need to end domestic terrorism. Biggs is organizing the End Domestic Terrorism Rally in Portland, Oregon, scheduled for August 17th. And this article is coming out on July 15th, 2019. So, that would certainly be nice, wouldn't it? Sort of a rally of people that aren't communist scum actually supporting the country, the president, the notions of normality, of Christendom, of liberty and justice for all, that sort of thing. Wouldn't that be great? After a member of Antifa, armed with a rifle and Molotov cocktails, wreaked havoc at a migrant detention center in Washington State this weekend, Joe Biggs, an Army veteran, reporter, and political activist, says it is more important than ever for patriots to speak out against the group. I would concur, Joe. I would also say that it's more important for patriots to just do something for Pete's sakes. It's easy to get behind the keyboard and do a lot of stuff. And that's nice, but I think people need to reach out to other people around them, make that awkward conversation at the grocery store, make that awkward conversation wherever you happen to be. If you see someone of like mind, or that you even maybe feel is of like mind, talk to that person. That happened to me a couple months ago. And I'm not that guy. I'm trying to do better, but I'm typically not that guy that's going out there and saying, hi there, buddy. Looks like you might not be a communist root bat. But that happened at a grocery store at least 4 months ago. I don't know. It's been a while. But I was at one of the usual Amazon-based food establishments. And I saw a guy with a Trump shirt. And I passed him once, and I was like, aghast. I was like, holy cow. And somebody in this grocery store that doesn't appear to be a communist or some sort of complete fruit bat demented frog. So I said, hey, nice shirt there, buddy. And we got to talking for a few minutes, and it was one of those occasions that I wished I had my little container of Anomic Age business cards, because I could have given it to the guy and said, hey, if you like Trump, you might like this show, AnomicAge.com. I didn't follow my own advice. I did not have the business cards in there. And it was a teachable moment for myself, because I thought, hey, I got to step up my game. I got to start carrying these things around with me for Pete's sakes. I'll be the first to admit, I'm the world's worst marketer and self-promoter ever. I'm just terrible at it. So if you're good at it, please help me out. I'm trying to do better, but I'm not the car salesman talking your platform up kind of guy. I sort of slip it in to a conversation if it's very warranted and someone else sort of addresses it to me first. They're like, hey, I'm really interested in not being a fruit bat, and I'm interested in liberty and justice and patriotism and the American. I'm like, holy cow. Boy, have I got a show for you. You've been talking to the right guy. I'm John Age. I got a great platform, AnomicAge.com. Check it out. But I digress. Biggs, along with Enrique Tarrio and others, other organizers, are planning a End Domestic Terrorism rally in Portland, August 17th, in the wake of the violence against Andy Ngo last week. Stunning attacks on migrant detention center from a self-identified member of Antifa. I didn't even have this in my stack of things to discuss, but I'd be remiss if I didn't at least talk about this idiot that bombed an ICE facility a few days ago and was put down. I was surprised that the officers there put this guy down. This is what they should be doing. But these weren't police officers. These were actually some of the federal agents there shot and killed this clown. But that was my thought initially. I was thinking, man, they must not have gotten the stand down. We're just following the orders memo. But then I realized they weren't police. They were some federal agents, so to speak. So perhaps they didn't get the memo that all the police forces in the country have gotten, where we're just going to stand down and wring our hands and hope for the best while patriots, citizenry, and property is destroyed by communist trash. So apparently these guys didn't get that memo because they put this guy down like Old Yeller. Good for them. That's what should happen to most of these people. But it's not. I can't believe someone actually did something normal. That's insane. But I digress. Here we go. Bottom line here is Joe Biggs has been taken off Twitter. That was somewhere down the line in the article. I'm just sort of skipping to some of the other bits and bobs from that one. Yeah, Joe Biggs was on Twitter for a long time. I followed him, always commented on a lot of his information, had a lot to bring to the table. And of course, he's been taken off Twitter, like everyone else. I can't believe I'm still up there, to be honest with you. We'll see how long that lasts. New York Post. Swedes are getting implants in their hands to replace cash, credit cards. And it shows a guy screaming while some guy's shoving something in his hand. Yikes. Thousands of people in Sweden are having futuristic microchips implanted in their skin to carry out everyday activities and replace credit cards and cash. More than 4,000 people have already had these scientific chips about the size of a grain of rice inserted in their hands, with the pioneers predicting millions will soon join them. So we heard about this. I don't think it was Sweden. It was another one of those countries sort of around that neighborhood in Europe. We heard this a few years ago where they were testing this, and it was, I can't recall the name. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on it. There was a company that was beginning this a few years ago, and just like I always talk about, the Overton window and this rash of incrementalism is moving it on over. And here we are, 2019. We got thousands of people in Sweden getting things shoved in their hand. This is coming from July 14th, 2019, Lee Brown. In case you wanted to follow up on that and read the full article. It's just disgusting, people. I don't know what to say. Oftentimes, Did people not read Revelation here? Revelation's in the Bible where it talks about you're going to have a mark to buy or sell. And this is a sign of the apocalypse, the end of times, the end of the world. To borrow the parlance from Ghostbusters, mass hysteria, dogs and cats living together, dot, dot, dot. It's not going to be pretty. I'm trying to bring some levity into a situation which is not at all funny. It's disgusting. It's disturbing. I can't believe on one side of my brain that people are doing this, but then there's the real side of my brain that says, of course I can. People are, by and large, brain-dead idiots that just follow the herd in this groupthink and do what the heck ever the mainstream media tells them. So it's kind of, why wouldn't you think they would do this? They're, by and large, not fully developed people. They're just not at all. Will it come here? Of course it will. Will anyone do anything? Of course not. I don't know what to say. It's just sad. This is why I limit my exposure to the news. If you missed this earlier in the week, New York City experienced a mass power outage for quite a while. And this came in yesterday, I do believe, from Fox 5. Thousands without electricity following power outage in Northeast D.C. Wow, that's not a place you want to be without power, is it, folks? July 15th, 2019. Josh Rosenthal from Fox 5 D.C. Several thousands of Pepco customers are without power in Northeast D.C. following a large outage Monday night. Nearly 7,000 customers were without power in the district. The numbers dropped to around 2,003, around midnight, and so forth and so on. When I saw this, I thought the same thing that I thought when I saw this New York power outage. I thought, huh, what a coincidence. There's no way anyone could be pulling this off intentionally, is there? No, of course not. You know, it's just summer when most people are out and about. It's not cold outside. There's no snow on the ground keeping them indoors. It's hot. People are out. And in some pretty big East Coast cities, we got some major power outages. And these are pretty big communist-run crime holes. You got New York, you got D.C., you know, in case you've done no homework at all, a lot of people there, primarily communists, you know, they've banned guns, they've increased crime, there's all kinds of rape, murdering, robbery, and pillaging. No big deal. I know what we'll do. We'll turn the lights off for a while and see how everyone reacts. That's what I think it is. I think it's a little bit of a social experiment. It's a dry run, as the communists always do. They pull a dry run first to see how people are going to react, and then they really roll out the full op. So that's exactly what I think this is. It's a perfect time of the year to do it. People are out. There's no snow on the ground keeping people in. And you really just need an incendiary device. Not quite a literal one, but that could happen as well. But you need a device like, hey, let's cut all the power out and see how the people react. And then people start robbing. People start breaking stuff. People start looting stores. And hey, there's no power. There's nothing we can do. Let's just let the humans run amok. I think that's exactly what this is. I think it's a dry run for a larger event. I wouldn't at all be surprised if we see this sort of thing proliferate down the East Coast at the very least, and either coincide with events on the West Coast or coincide with manipulated weather events on the West Coast, where you've got the usual suspect, all these fires and earthquakes, and oh, that's just all natural. Yeah, it'd be really terrible if we saw that on the West Coast, if we saw power outages on the East Coast, and if we saw hurricanes in the Gulf. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying it would be a heck of a coincidence, wouldn't it? Let's move on. Oh, boy. This one I was hesitant to even mention. Ah, what the heck. WorldNewsDaily.com. Yoko Ono, I had an affair with Hillary Clinton in the 70s. Good grief. To which I say, ooh. Yoko Ono shocked reporters yesterday when she responded to a question concerning the presidential run of Hillary Clinton and the possibility that she could be the first woman president of the United States. I'm trying to see when this thing came out. I'm not seeing a clear date on this one. Oh, this is... Let me see. I still can't find a clear date on it. The comments suggest that it's from 2019 sometime, but I don't know. It's not giving me a nice date. Nonetheless, the artist and widow of John Lennon, who is in Los Angeles to present a collection of cups and saucers she is exhibiting at the Museum of Modern Art, totally took reporters by surprise by admitting she had not only met the former First Lady at various times during a series of protests against the Vietnam War in New York in the 1970s, but also that they were intimate. Oh boy. Well, that's no surprise. I mean, anyone that knows Hillary Clinton knows that she has all kinds of connections to the occult, all kinds of connections to being gay, homosexual, all kinds of connections to the Communist Party, all kinds of connections to Sal Alinsky, all kinds of connections to the CIA, just like old Bill Clinton, CIA too, all the way, bro. Yeah, none of this is surprising. I suppose it's somewhat surprising that it's getting any sort of mainstream press. I don't know. Not surprising to me, just sort of ho-hum. Not really a story, it's just kind of, okay. Breitbart.com report: Facebook embeds tracking codes in photos to collect more of your data. This is from July 15th, 2019. The author of this piece is Lucas Nolan. An Australian cyber researcher alleges that social media giant Facebook embeds tracking codes in order to monitor who sees and shares your photos. Well, that's not a shock, is it? I guess this is news to someone, but this is not really a new thing. This should be what everyone already knows. This should be old hat. It's kind of like they're, like I've said many times, the communists are just uncloaking. They are what they've always been, the evil people that they've always been. They're just kind of pulling the mask off. They're pulling the velvet glove off the iron fist that is communism. That's all they're really doing. So we knew that Facebook and all these other social media outlets are doing this. I guess it's somewhat interesting that it's coming to light in a bit more of a mainstream fashion, but you shouldn't put anything on social media that you wouldn't want everyone to see. So, and to be used against you, quite honestly, that's all it is, especially Facebook. I've spoken to my wife about this and other family members about this. Please, take all the pictures off. Take all the pictures of everyone off, because read the fine print. If you do read the fine print, you will know that you are giving up your rights to those photographic images. So they are no longer yours. They're Facebook's. And they could sell that data and sell those images and everything else. Just like Google. Google is not a search engine. It's a data collection device. That's all it is. You think, oh, I just put in yardsticks and I put in rabbits or whatever the heck you're searching for in Google, and that's all it's doing? Come on. Anything free has a hook in it. Ask any fish, okay? So you should think the same thing from all these social media conglomerates and from these quote-unquote search engines, or to be more clear, data collection devices that collect your data because you're so stupid, you give it to them for free, and they sell it to other people. Because you're a boob. Let's move on. Oh boy. From the sublime to the completely disgusting, WashingtonTimes.com. Transgender weightlifter wins 2 gold medals in women's competition. This is great, isn't it? This is coming from Victor Morton, Washington Times, on Monday, July 15th, 2019. The transgender conquest of women's sports continued over the weekend as a New Zealand weightlifter took home multiple gold medals at the 2019 Pacific Games in Samoa. Oh boy. You know what? I don't watch the Olympics because, quite honestly, I hate the Olympics. I think they're stupid. That's just me. I know from whence they started, and I know primary person pushing the Olympics and the founder of the logo and the rings, the whole nine yards, Adolf Hitler. And I just see it as a big sham and a big who cares, but that's just me. And the thing is that this stinking Olympics never go away. Everyone thinks it's just every 4 years they have this mess. No, they have it all the bleeping time. It's always some sort of Olympic mess going on. For example, right here, we got, what is this garbage? Pacific Games in Samoa? Okay. Laurel Hubbard won two gold medals and a silver in the three heavyweight categories for women weighing more than 87 kilograms or 192 pounds, finishing first in the snatch, lift, and combined categories, and second in the clean and jerk. I'm reeling in the jokes here, folks, because I am not going to go there. The 41-year-old weightlifter was born as Gavin Hubbard and reportedly transitioned. She just let it over while in her mid-30s. According to Cauldron Pool, a Christian website that reported the outcome, the woman in second place was... I'm not going to get into all these names. Who won the gold medal at the blah, blah, blah. After Hubbard withdrew with an injured elbow, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it's sort of the article just sort of abruptly ends there for no apparent reason. Anyway, so we got a guy who won and beat some girls in weightlifting competition. All right. I mean, it's not really surprising, is it? Somebody out there is going, what's not surprising, John? Well, none of it's surprising, really. It's certainly not surprising that a guy is stronger than a woman and can lift more weight than her and can win gold medals when competing against women. That's not surprising. It's not surprising that this is allowed in the Olympics. It's not surprising that this is somehow news to anyone. It's not surprising that this is the culture that we live in. It's not surprising that we are living in the satanic, bizarre world death cult, affectionately known to me and others as the Anomic Age. I mean, none of this is really surprising. I suppose it's just disgusting, disheartening, disturbing to me and hopefully a lot of other people, but I guess most people just love it and embrace it. FoxNews.com, group sues Boston for banning Christian flag, approving 284 others. This is by Caleb Parquet, Fox News, one day ago. July 15th, it says here. The city of Boston, Massachusetts, is being sued for religious discrimination for banning the Christian flag while permitting 284 others, according to a federal lawsuit filed last week. Wow. I'll just stop there. I'm not even going to read the rest of this article because the headline and the initial text is enough. So here we've got Boston, a very famous city in America. I mean, once upon a time, Boston wasn't a communist-run slum hole. It was a very historic city. It's, you know, all over the place in our American history. This is an important place to be, and a place which was once upon a time held in reverence and very patriotic and very conservative. I mean, that's once upon a time, that was Boston. Now it's a communist scum hole. So they're banning the Christian flag there, which shouldn't surprise anyone. I mean, this is America. This is what we have allowed to occur in this country. This is what we are living with. 284 other flags. Let me guess. I'm pretty sure that the Muslim flag is permitted. Probably the ISIS flag is permitted. Let me see. The Somali flag, Pakistan flag, Iran, Iraq. All those flags are probably just fine. We just don't want to dare have a Christian flag. And the people just stood by, did nothing. Should have been a million people in the street in Boston, but there weren't. They were at the baseball game instead. This is in sharp contrast. We've already seen the Baphomet statue in the Arkansas Capitol building, or I should say out in front of the Arkansas Capitol building. We've got the Baphomet statue. But in Boston, one of the most historic and important cities in America, we're having a lawsuit so we can have a Christian flag there. Any problems? Any problems at all? Anyone see any need to stand up? Nah, of course not. ClarionProject.com. Oh, who's this one coming from? Does it have a name? It's got a photo credit, but no author's name? Here we go, here we go. Excuse me. July 14th, 2019. Shireen Kidosi. Civilizational suicide. Qatar's vision shapes American classrooms. Oh boy. Qatar's vision for America is now being peddled through our children's classrooms, targeting a pliable population and one with a long shelf life. Beyond its media enterprise and bought off DC influences and think tanks, Qatar has set its sights on the next generation of Americans. In at least 10 years, Qatar has given $30 million to public schools and over $1.4 billion to universities. Those universities include Georgetown, Texas A&M, Virginia Commonwealth, Cornell, Michigan, Arizona State, Carnegie Mellon, Harvard, Johns Hopkins, University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, University of Iowa, University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, UNC Chapel Hill, no surprise, University of Southern California, University of Washington, Seattle, Washington State, and St. Louis, and Northwestern University. Donations from Qatar streamed in through, and it's got a whole laundry list of other agencies there. So, not surprised, it's just kind of more of the same. It befuddles me sometimes, and it pains me to even mention a lot of these news stories. I've sat back and thought, maybe I should just not do the news anymore, I don't know. Because I feel that I'm repeating the same news stories continually week after week. Not the same literal news story, but the same events are going on over and over and over and over. I'm still waiting for the week when I can say, and the people stood up by the millions in eight cities across the United States, and they said, we aren't going to take it anymore. But alas, I don't think that's going to happen. It's just sick. And it really goes back to here, the public school indoctrination system. I mentioned it last week, the week before, and probably the week before that. K through 12. Indoctrination. College, university. Say it with me, class. Weaponization. That's exactly what we're seeing. So K through 12, they're just getting indoctrinated into hating themselves, hating white males, hating conservatives, hating males in general, hating all things United States, hating all things Western culture, hate, hate, hate everything that you are. And then when you go to college and or university, you're getting the cherry on top. You're getting, yes, you're terrible. Now let's do something about it. Let's get Antifa out there. Let's put some guys, I guess they're guys, good grief, who knows, dressed in these black pajamas looking akin to a bizarro world Storm Shadow, but not as cool. We'll take to the streets en masse and we'll assault people with bike locks and we'll claim we're victims. And nothing will be done about it. The police will stand down. The people will stand down. Everybody will stand down. And the Antifa and their akin clowns will run roughshod over everyone else. And that's how it'll play out, guys. That's what's going to happen. No, that's not what's going to happen. That's what is happening. Because no one's doing anything about it. I don't know if it's a lack of masculinity. If it's a lack of knowledge, logic, intellect? I don't really know. I think it's a culmination of all of those things combined. To be honest with you, I think that's exactly what it is. A lot of people don't know what to do. A lot of people don't have the guts to do anything. A lot of people are afraid to do anything. And it's not going to get you anywhere. George Washington's not walking through that door. Thomas Jefferson, Thomas Paine, George Mason. None of those people are walking through that door. Those people are commemorated for what they did. Actions they took. Not tweets. Not message board posts. Not playing tough guy at the park. Not watching the game. Not wearing a jersey to go to Walmart and looking idiotic. None of that. Those guys are not immortalized in American history for any of the things that we currently do today in our society. As men, I'm only going to speak for the men because the women are vastly doing their job. The men folk are the ones when I look around going, okay, well, if you look at the litany of guests, the females that we've had on this program and what they've done and brought to the table and are continuing to do, every male should feel ashamed. You're not doing enough. You're not doing anything, mostly. But you're certainly not doing enough. So, I'm going to get off that diatribe because we're going to talk about that with our guest today. It's going to be great. I am happy. In just a mere matter of moments, we're going to talk to Joe Prim, VigilantWolf.com. And we'll talk all things masculinity in just a mere matter of seconds. So, bear with me. Stick around. We'll talk to our guest. Don't forget, AnomicAge.com. Share that link. Now, just a mere matter of seconds, we'll gillette over, and we'll speak with our guests. Hold on to your hats. It is my pleasure to welcome Joe Prim into the Anomic Age today. Joe is a Christian, husband, father, the founder of Vigilant Wolf, and the host of Ever Vigilant. Our mission is to challenge and encourage men to prepare, defend, and lead at home and in their communities. His information can be found at VigilantWolf.com, but fear not, all that's going to be available in the guest media section. So if you're walking around or listening to this at the gym, it'll be on the website for you. Welcome to the show, Joe. I'm so happy to speak with you, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John. What a pleasure to come hang out with you and talk to you and your listeners.
Absolutely. I'm excited. I love talking to like-minded people, and I know you're on that same page, so.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to our conversation. I'm sure we'll be all over the place.
Oh yeah, there's a wide range of insanity to touch on. I feel like every day it gets worse and worse. Well, I guess first and foremost, what put you on this path? You're a husband, a dad, a Christian, so you got a full plate, even without venturing into this realm.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Things are always busy and always changing. We're always looking for a good challenge. So at some point, well, you know, I grew up in a Christian home, a really strong quality parents, still have really good relationship with both my mom and my dad. And at some point along the line there, and I grew up in one of those Christian homes where even if my parents didn't agree with what was going on in the church, they would just kind of do their own thing anyway. They really didn't give a care what other people thought. They did what they thought was the right thing to do. So I kind of had a crazy childhood where I was homeschooled way before really anybody knew what in the world homeschooling was. And I had, you know, adopted brothers and sisters. My parents really just went about life different than the way everybody else did by trying to do what they felt was the right thing to do at that time. And somewhere along the line, when I turned 17, we went on a missions trip down to Guatemala. And one of my sisters was adopted from Guatemala. So my parents always had a kind of a love for that country. And being that this was well before the internet and easy access to videos and information about a country, you know, there would be very limited information at the library about a country like Guatemala just because of its size. And not a lot of people even probably knew where it was. And So they always had a lot of interest in that country. And the church we were going to was going on a missions trip down to Guatemala. So immediately when my parents found out about that, my dad was like, I'm going to go for sure. I want to be able to have the opportunity to look into this country and meet the people and have a little bit better understanding of the culture there and the needs in that country. So my sister, of course, she was a shoo-in, you know, her being 15 or 16 at the time, you know, she had, there was no doubt in her mind that going down there to visit some orphanages and play with some kids was, you know, on the agenda right away.
Yeah.
For me, though, I had really no desire to go down there. I was kind of set in my ways. I was 17. I was at that point, I was kind of like that guy who really didn't even like to go to the amusement parks because I didn't really like roller coasters even. You know, that kind of crap just kind of scared me. And if stuff was going to kind of scare me, why play around with it?
Mm-hmm.
So it was a real challenge for me to even go down to Guatemala. I thought it was kind of a waste of time and energy and money and everything. At that time, you're 17, you're kind of starting to think a little bit more about that sort of thing. And I was, you know, convinced by my dad that it would be a good thing to do, to have a little bit better opportunity to see what the rest of the world is like and to experience a third world country, but also be able to experience a different culture and a completely different world, really. And so we went down on this trip, and I jumped through all the hoops. We hiked up into a lot of, like, remote mountain villages and did some things like that. And overall, I mean, I can look back now, and it was a nice experience. But at the banquet at the last night, they had this great dinner. And then we had this time of conversation of, you know, who would be interested in coming back and doing this again? And I think everybody around this big banquet table, John, stood up and said, oh, I would love to come back and see these orphans, and I'd love to come back and hike up into these villages. And I think I was the only guy still sitting around the table going, I did my thing. I checked my box. I did my good duty. I'm done with this.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I'm the only guy who sat down there, and it was pretty obvious, I think, to everybody that I was the only one sitting. And we get up to the hotel room, and my dad and I are doing our final packing to get to go to the airport. And my dad says to me, he says, what would you think if we moved down here and we started working at this orphanage that this organization is starting?
Oh, man, that's heavy.
And, you know, if I didn't have like the long track record of parents that would do things like on the spur of the moment because they thought it was the right thing to do, I probably wouldn't have thought too much about it. But even in that moment, I think all I could think, John, was, man, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut and hopefully this doesn't happen. Well, less than a year later, John, we were all packed up, stuff sold off, support raised, and we were moved down there to Guatemala. And that kind of was the beginning of this, of my trek into understanding and have a better idea of what it is to be a man. Because you experience things in a foreign country, you see different things, you see the acceptance of the uncertainty of tomorrow, you see the embrace of what life really is. The love of those that you care about, your friends, your family. You see people that are committed to one another in a different way. And on top of that, I went from being a guy who didn't want to go on roller coasters at amusement park to a guy who was going into remote mountain villages on a regular basis with doctor teams or mission teams or helping with dental teams. And going off and leading teams and doing things like that that really stretched me in who I was. And really, at the end, brought me into being a completely different being. I mean, almost completely different, evolved me into a completely different beast than who had gone down there. And so that was kind of the beginning of this understanding. And it's funny because, you know, as you get older, you start to look back over time and you start to see where those points were in your life that really created you or really turned you into who you are today. Where those foundation points, where they came from and why they are so important to you, and why there are some things in life that are really worth dying for, and why there are some things in life that so many people are stuck on or so caught up in that really make no difference at all. And having the skill or having a way of being able to separate those two points makes all the difference in the world. So for me, that was kind of, you know, from 18 or 17 to 20, 21-ish, I spent down there in Guatemala, and it was, man, that really was the foundation for who I would become today. And really, what happened then was I went down there and really came back a different type of person, you know, had a real difficult time kind of processing this country and the way we do things. And I would never say that I had PTSD, but I probably just had some of those different coping issues where you're trying to understand and get back into a culture that you had grown up in and didn't quite realize how different that the culture was that you had spent time in. So I came back here and slowly adjusted back into American life, into this life here that we live in Candyland, and went down that trail of apathy and really becoming just that apathetic zombie who went to work, did his best to excel at work, and came home and played a ton of video games, a lot of video games, John, because that was my purpose. That was what I was driving a lot of energy into. And at some point along the line there, I realized that was not fulfilling and that was not the life that I wanted to lead. And about 5 years ago, really kind of stepped back into embracing and trying to get a better understanding of what real masculinity is, what it means to prepare, defend, and lead, what it really means to lead in your home, lead your children, be the head of the household, all that sort of stuff, and really started to get into studying that, getting a better grasp on what was expected of me, what my real role was to fill as a father and as a husband and as a leader in the community versus just trying to get away with the least amount possible and go and do my job. And I never really was one that slacked at work. I always was a pusher at work, but when it came to time to come home, I really would let off the gas and really just kind of fell into that malaise that I think so many men in this country really are in right now. And that has really become the effort of Vigilant Wolf and the Ever Vigilant podcast to challenge and encourage men to prepare, defend, and lead at home and in their communities to grab on to what it means to be a man. I don't think that definition has changed since the beginning of time. I think that different cultures and different societies have tried to change that to their advantage for their own power's sake. But the real definition of what it means to be a man and who we should be as men, I don't think has changed one bit.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more on that one. Good grief, man. There's a lot to unpack in that. I love it. Yeah, I mean, if no one's ever been to Central America, Mexico, and those sort of areas, I mean, just on a small scale, you can appreciate this for sure. The safety concerns aren't quite as much. They're very minimal. So if you're going on a hike, there's the cliff face. There's you. There's no guardrail. There's no, you know, warnings. It's if you are dumb enough to fall off the cliff, then the nearest medical attention is probably about 10 hours away, and you're probably just going to be a spot at the bottom of the canyon. So, I mean, when I've been down there, I really appreciate that on the one level, just because I hate the bubble-wrapped society that we've become in, and I think that's just sort of this this integral male trait. We're like, I like a little danger. I want to at least walk around this cliff face and not, you know, see Ranger Rick down there that's going to save me. But that's just on a small scale. But I mean, to your point about the travel and the living in a foreign land, wow, that just sounds awesome. And I was talking to my wife the other night, just sort of about traveling and kind of why I love to travel so much. And to me, it just gives me so much perspective and appreciation of where I am. Not just men, I think most people just get caught up in that little dot they live in, that little spot on the map. They're like, this is my whole world. This is the grocery store. This is the drugstore up the street or what have you. And just taking a flight 6 hours away even, you get the idea of, wow, there's a whole other world out there. There's a whole other culture in this other spot on the map that doesn't go to that drugstore and doesn't go to eat at this place and doesn't get their groceries from this place. I mean, it gives you so much more appreciation. I can't even fathom getting to do what you did and actually live in another country for that long. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, and I think what you're saying there, it's we live in a world with very little consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you live in like Candyland where there's very little consequences, it starts to affect everything that you do, because without consequences, you feel like you can get away with a lot more things. And I think it just makes us weaker. It makes us more dependent on others then rather than ourselves for our own safety and security. And obviously then at that point starts to make you less knowledgeable in what you can do or what you should do. And that in and of itself is kind of a strange American trait, the idea that somebody else is always going to come and rescue you or fix the situation or fix the problem with you should things get a little bit tough. But I think though too, one of the beautiful things about the lack of all the safety rails there and stuff is that you realize there is uncertainty to life. And really what makes life beautiful and life so valuable, whether it be your wife or your children or your greatest friends, what makes life so valuable is that it can be extinguished in a moment. And in a moment, things can go from everything going great to everything going very, very horribly wrong. And when you start to take away those consequences or the idea that that can happen, it really starts to take away the value of life and starts to take away what it means to truly love somebody, what it means to truly care about somebody, what it means to know that everything could be over in in a moment's notice. And it's a different way of looking at things. It's a different way of life that seems a little bit foreign to us right now.
It certainly is. I mean, to your point about coming home from work and the video games and all that stuff that I'd say the typical man does now, which is so disheartening. I get so much frustration because I see all that escapism just for what you said it was. It's just weakness. You know, you come home, it's like, all right, I don't want to talk to the wife. I don't want to play with the kids. I want to play with my game or I want to watch the game. You know, it's like most of the American male society has become a spectator sport. It's become I'm going to play this virtual thing or I'm going to watch these other guys or I'm going to, you know, pretend I'm this guy watching the action movie. And it's so far afield from what our grandparents and dare say our great grandparents were living and where they were out there doing it. Yeah. 2019, the usual male that's their extension of reality. And don't get me wrong, I watch basketball here and there, but not to the extent that I used to. And I just get frustrated when all the sports seasons come and I'm like, all right, it's time for all the guys to play dress up. They're going to put on their jersey and paint their face and do all this tough guy act. Meanwhile, where's the real action? Where's the spending time with the kids? Where's the let's fix the car? Let's do the masculine stuff that sadly most guys are just, I don't know where it is. I get angry all the time. Like, I don't know where it is. Where is it?
I think that what it is, is that you get to feel like you're doing something. You get that. I think it fools your mind into believing that you're fighting in a battle or you're going on some great adventure or that you're accomplishing something. One thing that, being older, a big part of video game culture now has become achievements.
Mm-hmm.
And you get an achievement in the game. And, as a 30-year-old man at the time playing video games, you're always trying to rack up the achievements and stuff. But what really struck me about how addicting a lot of this stuff is too is I have an 8-year-old son, and I'm very on top of him about his video game playing. He is only allowed to play video games on the weekends. We have real tight reins on that, on his behavior along with playing the video games, because I know how addicting and how much that can become a part of your life and a detriment to you in moving forward. But one thing that I found so amazing, John, was how even at 7 at the time, he wanted to get achievements. Mm-hmm. And it really struck me as how addictive and how crazy it is the way that those are set up, because I understood as a grown man that would be a part of playing the games. But that even at 7 years old, he'll be like, well, how do I get this achievement, Dad? Hey, I got 3 achievements today. And he'll be bragging about the achievements that he got at 8 now. And, you know, the other day I had a conversation with him and I said, hey, I just want you to understand and clearly realize that these are not achievements. You have achieved nothing. That little, you know, circle or that little pixel square that you earned means nothing in the real world. Yeah. You know, you got no real experience from that. You gained no real knowledge from that. All you did it will fools you into believing that you accomplished something. And I think that, you know, I think that the games are set up that way intentional, but I think that there's always that inherent part of a man to want to go out and explore, to see what's next, do something spectacular, to do something special, or to, I guess at this point, even at least see that happen, right? On the football field or like with the advent now of Twitch and people watching video games, which is just crazy. Oh, that's hilarious, to me, yeah. You know? but I think people want to be involved in that stuff, but they don't want to take the risk. Again, we go back to consequences. They're not willing to take the risk. They're not willing to step out. They're not willing to put themselves or their energy or their time or their money on the line for anything to really have an experience. Instead, from the safety of their home, they can pretend like they're having experience. And I think there's a real danger in that, a real danger, because it weakens us in so many different ways that I don't really think that we quite even understand the consequences of at this point.
Oh, yeah. We definitely have gotten weakened for sure. I've spoken about this many times where I feel sad myself because I look back at my father and my grandfather, my maternal grandfather especially, because he lived right next door when I was a child. Just looking at that parallel, and, you know, we're talking 100, not even 100 years with those 3 generations here, but I look back at my father and grandfather and like, man, they could do anything. They could fix anything. Yeah. They could put together anything. They could do the garden. They could do the laundry. They could fix the car. They could fix the sink. Like, I felt there was nothing they couldn't pull off. And I'm trying to get maybe like a tenth of that. That our generation has lost so much. And I hope that we can get it back, if nothing else, just so we can pass it on to our offspring. But it's so bizarre how we've lost so much in such a short span of time, you know, where we got guys clicking stuff to get that reward sensibility when it used to be, hey, look, babe, I just made this table with my own 2 hands. Look, I've created this awesome thing. And now it's like, hey, I got some coins, or I got extra life points or what have you. I mean, it's such a bizarre parallel.
Yeah, it totally is, and that has, I think, to do with, you know, the way that this stuff is feeding back to our brains. You know, you're getting that constant that drip of pleasure when your phone clicks or beeps because, oh, look, somebody messaged me or somebody liked a picture that I put on, versus that pleasure, and that all that stuff is just instantaneous. That only lasts a moment because now you're looking for the next hit. But the reality is, whether it be taking down a deer and bringing food home to provide for your family, or building that table with your hands, or things like that, that pride, that joy, that boost that you get to your brain for accomplishing something like that is so much more, lasts so much longer. and is so much better for you because it raises that confidence level of who you are and what you're able to accomplish. I see so many men these days kind of with their heads down or their shoulders slouch, just kind of shuffling down the road, even sometimes, you know, holding their kid's hand or with their wife. And it's like, man, put your head up.
Yes.
But I think that so many men are just so confused about what their role actually is and how they are supposed to be contributing and what's expected of them. And when you're at that point, it's easy just to fall back into, another thing rather than playing video games or something, it's just as easy to fall into whether it be, you know, alcohol abuse or drug abuse, or whether it be another one that I think has become real popular is this escapism into paying a lot of money to send your kids off to different sports teams. Mm-hmm. And that I think is exactly the same thing, but it's a little bit less obvious of some of the other escapisms, but it's that throwing everything you have into watching your kid do something that you didn't get to do or that you think you should have been able to do. And the shame of that to me is I've worked with so many men who are working as much overtime as they possibly can so they can afford to put their kid on the best travel team available so that some other man can teach their son how to shoot a basketball or how to you know, throw a baseball, rather than be there and be that influence in their child's life themselves. And I think that, you know, again, it comes back to that same scheme, escaping away from the realities of what we really should be doing and letting somebody else do the dirty work while we just do what we know how to do. And it's I think it's a shame, and I think the consequences are only going to be amplified and only going to get worse as we see this weakening of knowledge and weakening of ourselves as people.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. This is a point I know I've belabored on this show many times, but it connects right up with what you were discussing about men with this sort of like, what are we doing? You know, this lethargic, ridiculous demeanor, but I've talked about this with my mom and other family members because I think back when I was a kid, and I'm only 41, so I'm not in my 70s or anything, but when we went out, like out of the house, you go to the grocery store, you go to the doctor, what have you, you know, you didn't dress up. You weren't going to church with the nice clothes on, but you looked nice. You had your shirt and your pants, and your mom wouldn't let you out if you had your play clothes on and going to, you know, that just wasn't happening. But you juxtapose that to where we are now. I mean, I feel like that's one of the reasons why I'm such a recluse, because when I leave the house, it's like, oh man, I'm going to that big box store with the W on the side of it. And I just have to physically and mentally prepare myself for what I'm going to be inundated with, because it's people wearing the curlers or wearing no shoes or wearing the most absurd mess in the world. And I, like, culturally, I just look around like, where's the pride? I mean, the men, yeah, where's your pride? And why are you letting the kid out of the house like that? Like, why are you dressing like you're going to go paint the house and you're going out and about in town? You know, I mean, it's such a bizarro world that we live in.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, it has changed so quickly.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest shame of it all, John, is that it's changed, like you said, in less than 100 years. We've gone from, you know, people that took pride in their history and in their heritage and what they did and what they were able to accomplish and took pride in where they were from and in their family name and in providing for their family and taking care of those that were weaker than them and in a bad place, to a people that, like you said, can't even seem to figure out how to get dressed in order to go out to the store. But I think that that's just one more symptom of, you know, what's going on in our society right now today. And it's sad, number one. It's something that we need to talk about, though, and something that we need to bring up and we need to raise awareness to, because it's a problem that's not going to go away. It's not going to get any better until we start to speak about it, until we start to take action ourselves about it, because, you know, everything really of value in our culture, things that were of value throughout history. And again, none of this stuff is new, this idea of attack on masculinity or this idea of what's going on with feminism or with children. None of this stuff is new. This has all happened before and all led down a path and a road of destruction. But you can see what seems obvious to me, John, is that as a Christian, I see that there are certain innate things that God created. Marriage, men, women, children, babies, just to name five right off the top of my head, that were created in his image and were mandated by him, that are under complete and total attack by our world around us today. And I don't think that that just happens by accident, because those things that have held true and have been important to society and to cultures since the beginning of time, you know, with family and males being masculine in the way that they acted, women being feminine in the way they acted, those traits have been around since the beginning of time. Those ideals have been around since the beginning of time. And the best of cultures have adopted those and maybe adapted here and there, but the best of cultures have always adopted those and made them an important part of their society. And you see, again, you see that same, you see the opposite going on here today. And all of those things are under complete and total attack. And unless we speak out about it, unless we encourage men to, you know, take on their role, take back their role, become the fathers that they're expected to be, teach the correct values to their children, and to be there for their wife, to have her as their as the role that women should play in a marriage, where it's as the helpmate, as the second in command, there to advise and there to help and there to help really with the raising and the rearing of children with the correct values. You know, it's no wonder that we've lost so many of the values and so much of the culture that we used to have, because that was traditionally and historically has always been the role of women to, as they're raising their children, to bring them up to understand why we celebrated certain holidays or why these things were so important to us or why we don't lie or cheat or steal or why we try to treat others better than ourselves or have a good understanding of what empathy is. All these things that used to be passed on by women raising the children, it's no wonder that those things have gone away as we've sent off our children to daycare centers to have the people making minimum wage teach our children the values and teach our children our culture and those things that are supposed to be important to us. So as you see children getting ushered off to the easy way, you see, by having somebody else rear and raise your children and maybe completely different values, completely different culture than what you hold, and they're there for 40 plus hours a week, and you can see those effects on our culture and society. And it's things like that that we've adopted in that I don't think we've even really considered the consequences of that are creating our own demise and are creating our own the death of what was at one point a very beautiful way of living, a very beautiful way of life and of thinking.
Yeah, that's certainly the truth. Good grief. While you're talking, I was repressing myself to go on a complete jag on this whole thing, but yeah, I mean, from my perspective and coming from my background, like the academia is the cornerstone of destruction here. I mean, not completely, but I always kind of pull the clock back to at least 1960, where we started seeing LBJ and the Great Society. Well, let's give everyone welfare and let's just take the dad out of the home. You get more money if you take the dad out of the home. Sounds great. And then you got the influx of drugs, which does nothing but destroy the whole family unit. And I always forget, oh, we took God out of schools because that can't be allowed. So, I mean, you've got all these integral pieces. You got abortion and then, you know, more drugs, 70s and 80s. And it just, it seems quite obvious. Like, here we go. We just tipped this one domino and the family just went poof. And now you got parents abdicating their responsibility and going, well, third wave feminism says mom's got to be in the workforce too. And the prices are so high, you got to have two people working. And then you got the media saying, well, you got to have this great car or you're not a man. And you got to have this great suit or you're not a man. And in converse, the guy is just going, well, I guess I better take another shift so I can get this great car and this great suit. Let's send the kids off to daycare. And then when they get to the cult of academia, they're just flooded with this Frankfurt School of Relativism. So you got where we are now, and it's like, well, I don't know if Bobby's a boy or not. He hasn't told us yet. You know, sure, he's got the chromosomes that say he's a boy, but he hasn't made that call, so let's just, let's stay gender fluid until Bob makes that call as to what the heck he is.
Yeah.
I try to put humor on it, but it's not funny. It's just my way of coping with the insanity, you know? I mean,
I'm with you, John. I'm about the same age as you, and it's just shocking how far we've come just since I was a kid. You know, I remember growing up in the neighborhood and, you know, you had some girls that were a little bit more Tom girlish. And, but at the same time, you know, the statistics show that I think 93% of those girls, by the time they turn 18, have fully grabbed onto, you know, their feminine, chromosomes or whatever you want to call it. And are, you know, completely content and happy to be a female, you know, and not that there was any confusion or we never considered that there was confusion in the past. It just was, she would like to hang out with the boys and she'd like to run around and wrestle and,
sure,
you know, shoot slingshots. And that's just how she was. That was her personality is how we used to think of it. And now the shame of it is that rather than let those kids sort that out till they turn 18, and then they could make a decision, an adult decision on where they want to go or what they want to do. Rather than that, now we're helping them make that decision at 12 and 9 years old to start taking drugs to change their body. And those children will then, that are on those hormone therapies, will never be able to have children.
Yeah.
And I mean, and then you go back to even sadder is the amount of those kids that then are committing suicide later in life because they're so confused, and rather than somebody coming alongside them and helping guide them and cope with what they're going through, they have somebody just tossing out drugs to them willy-nilly,
yeah,
like it doesn't make a difference, and ruining that kid's life at 12. And setting them up for a complete failure, depression, destruction from 12 or from 9, rather than setting them up on a firm foundation, encouraging them and helping give them stability. It's sad. And I think what happens too is a lot of these things become very trendy. Mm-hmm. And then there are certain people that choose to follow the trendy route and do that stuff intentionally to be trendy or to garner attention for themselves versus seeking out what is in the best interest of their children. And that's shameful. That's just wrong in so many different ways.
Yeah, the whole quote-unquote gender or sex thing is such a – oh, man, it's such a bunch of mess. Because when I was a kid, much like yourself, I just never came up. Maybe I was just naive and stupid, but we went in the woods and played war all afternoon. We didn't have, you know, long talks about, well, Willie, do you feel like a, you know, that just never came up. I wonder if it's that children don't get any of that structure. They don't get any of that, here, let's go make a tent or let's go build a fort. It's kind of like now you've got too much time on your hands and the whole idle mind is the devil's playground. So you start just pondering this, pontificating this insanity, you know?
You know what, John? I think it actually might be the opposite. I think it might be that they have less time on their hands because so many kids these days are from the moment they get up in the morning till they go to bed at night is choreographed down to the minute, whether it be kids overloaded with homework, kids with I mean, sports used to be just something you played for fun. Now it's so competitive on an adult level anyway or on their parents' level. It's so competitive now. They're spending hours each week practicing and playing games, whether it be sports or whether it be music or gymnastics or all these other different things that are filling up so much of our time that I don't think kids have enough time to just go out and play war all day like, like you or I used to do, you know. And as I started looking into and studying more of exactly what you're talking about, it became clearer to me that there were a lot of lessons that we learned just playing with the other kids in the neighborhood because there was always such a difference in ages, right? You'd be playing with some kids would be seven, some of us would be like 12 or 13 and still running the neighborhood. But we always figured out ways to be competitive or ways for us all to play together because a lot of times, especially if you're playing sports, you needed everybody you could get.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if we were running races, you would give the younger kids head starts and to keep it a challenge for yourself. So there was all these crazy things that we would be doing. We would be negotiating with one another. There was empathy if you hit a kid with a pitch or, you know, we would even, right, you would pitch underhand to maybe one kid, but the other kid you were throwing overhand to. So there was all these different types of negotiations and figuring things out that went along with playing with the kids in the neighborhood. And I think it was the same back in the tribal days or whether it was back in different neighborhoods in the cities back in the old days where – There was that constant negotiating going on of understanding who the other guy was, what his strengths, what his weaknesses were, right? Once you figured out that the one kid's mom always had a lot of cookies and every time you went over to her house, she had fresh cookies, well, then that was kind of his role. That guy was never going to not be included in the group because you could always go by his house and get cookies or one guy was always good at climbing trees. So if you're trying to scout something out, he was always the guy who made the climb up the tree. Or one guy was faster. And, you know, if there was an emergency or something happened to somebody, you knew he was the kid who was going to take off to go find the nearest home because he was the fastest. But everybody kind of then would go back and forth and you found your strengths and you found your weaknesses and you got to know each other because you spent so much time doing, like you said, playing war or building forts or, you know, digging in the dirt and playing with trucks or whatever you were doing. You spent so much time, just free time, to be creative, to understand things, to learn about stuff versus now where I think everything is just down to the minute figured out of what you're going to do, what you can do, what you can't do, and there's a lot less freedom. And I think that freedom is really necessary for kids to grow up and actually know who they are. And I think when you can have that freedom, you're a lot less likely to conform, you're a lot more likely to be confident, and you're a lot less likely to be influenced on academia and what they're going to throw at you when you get there. So the more you can be controlled from the moment you wake up in the morning, the more susceptible you are to falling into, well, the coach said if the ball goes – you know, down the first baseline, this is where I go. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's a guy on second and the ball goes down the first baseline, this is where I go. There's no room for ad-libbing. There's very little room for your own freedom or your own creativity. This is what the coach said. You know, there's not – and all that stuff is learned through somebody telling you what to do versus you experimenting like it used to be of how I'm going to react in this situation. So it's, you know, I think it's actually just too much control over our kids. And you know, again, and once again, not letting them learn the consequences of climbing a tree or figuring out how to climb trees or go out in the woods, you know, unsupervised or things like that, where we're, you know, helicopter parents and at the same time not allowing them very much freedom.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good perspective. I never really looked at it, but that's a nice one. Yeah. because I had structure within the home, but you know, outside when you're playing, it's a silly story, but I remember when I was a kid, we lived on an island. So, I mean, the water table was pretty close to the surface. And I remember I was out in the backyard with my grandfather and he said, yeah, you know, if you dig down enough, you'll hit water. And I was like, no way. He's like, sure, here's a shovel. So I just dug maybe a couple feet down, you know, I was probably 8 or 9, but I mean, it was awesome. It was fascinating. I was like, holy cow, I just got to dig and there's water under the ground. This is amazing. But, you know, like juxtapose that to, okay, we're going to soccer practice, we're going to band practice, we're going to all these. I mean, I definitely see that all over the place. The kids are just, it's this regiment of practices for all this stuff. And you know as well as I do, I mean, the kid's going to be happier than ever if you just throw a box out there in the yard and say, hey, we're going to cut this up into a tank or into, like, you know, whatever. I mean, yeah. The kids don't need all that insanity for the most part.
Yeah, no, you got to let them be creative and figure things out for themselves and, you know, come to an own understanding of what they love and what they don't. And not that they're, like you said, not that there isn't some need for structure and, you know, and an idea of steering them in a direction of right and wrong and what's good and what's not and what time you're expected to be home and if, you know, and not wavering from that or being lax in the rules that are there. But man, I think that freedom to explore and to, I think, learn who they are themselves is invaluable. Yeah, they've been. Well, and two, another thing, even like in a lot of countries, the school children get a lot longer of recesses or get more recesses than in the United States. And in some of, especially like the Scandinavian countries, they allow the kids to climb trees. Hmm. And there was even this park I was reading about, I can't remember which country it was in, where it's just a park kind of almost of junk. They have a fire pit there. They have tires for the kids to play with, boxes, you know, pieces of wood, just stuff where kids can build their own forts and things like that. And they have one adult that stays there just to supervise and make sure nobody gets hurt or somebody's mm-hmm. not, you know, getting violent or, you know, being bullying. But to said, for the most part, the kids all get along. They work together. I don't think they have any accidents they said they've had with the fire. And, But they've been realizing as they study this, the value of letting kids have their own freedom and having a park that's not set up with, you know, that cushy ground in it. Oh, yes. And, you know, all the plastic slides and all that kind of stuff, because they say even things like climbing trees. They said that if you let a kid start climbing a tree from a young age, they will very, very rarely get hurt because they'll only go as high as what they – is what they feel comfortable doing. So if they start climbing a tree when they're 5, they're only going to go to a certain height to where they feel uncomfortable, and then they'll come back down, or maybe they'll hang out there. And then as they learn how to balance and what branches they can trust and how they can hold on with you know, one hand or move over to another area, they'll start to explore, but only as they feel comfortable and only as they feel confident in themselves that they are safe. And what happens is if, let's say, a 9 or a 12-year-old has never climbed trees before and they expect that they should be able to go to the top. Mm-hmm. And that's when accidents start happening because they've never accustomed themselves to the balance and to how you're going to grip and what you're going to do. So they say even just simple things like that of climbing a tree, when you take away that freedom to climb trees because you're worried about the safety, it really only gets more dangerous the older they get before they start experiencing it. But, you know, in that you could go so much further with all that kind of stuff, John, because we've become a society that's so afraid of any type of failure. And I think that's a big part of that taking away that freedom as well, is we're so afraid to fail in whatever it is that we set out to do that most of the time we won't even set out to do anything because we're afraid we're not going to get the results that we want. And rather than just start that baby steps, oh, I only climbed up 2 feet up the tree. Cool, that's fine for now. And just take those baby steps and learn as you go along. We become so accustomed to having what we want at the best performance or the peak level immediately that we forget that somewhere along the line we got to crawl, and then we got to hold onto the table, and then we got to fall down 1,000 times before we can even walk. And that's not even, you know, to the point where we're running, you know, that's just to get to the point where we're walking. And I think we're taking away a lot of that from our kids. And I think it's, I mean, I think it's really hurting.
Oh, it absolutely is. We could do a whole, we could do a whole study on playgrounds. That was really a shock to me when I had my daughter. I went out to the playground again. You know, it had been 20 some years. So I was like, yeah, it's going to be, what the heck is all this mess? You know, like, and we live, or my mom does. So we go to grandma's house and we go to the school playground where I used to go as a kid. And I was telling my daughter this the other night when she was about to go to bed. I was like, you know, the playground used to be great. I mean, it was tires. There was like a telephone pole full of like stacks of tires you climbed up, and there was tires buried in the ground, and it was almost like a boot camp where there was tires chained together where you could jump through them, and there was a big, probably 12-foot metal pole you just climbed to the top and ring this bell, and I was like, man, your playground is fun, but not what it once was. I wish there was the old playground somewhere. I even told her about the slide. You used to have metal slides so you could go really fast. You know, I had to watch yourself in the summer, but the upside was really fast, really fun. And now it's all this foam everywhere and plastic everywhere. And even the playground is obviously this little prefab thing that came with instructions that it wasn't some guy just burying tires like it used to be. So,
yeah, it's fun. It looks beautiful.
Yeah.
But there's no challenge to it. There's very little of a challenge or of a putting yourself into an uncomfortable situation until you feel comfortable with it. It's a different mentality and a different way of looking at things. But I agree with you, John. It is funny. Every once in a while, we'll pass some park in some old town, and it'll be, you know, where they'll have like the old merry-go-round where you can get those things whipping around 1,000 miles an hour. And everybody was holding on for dear life. I think if we were to let go of those old merry-go-rounds, that you would have went flying like 20 feet.
Yeah. We should get to work on that. We can make our own throwback playground where it's, you know, the 80s era playground for kids to come experience reality or something.
Yeah, exactly. The insurance might be kind of high.
That's true. Oh, man. So, well, do you think there's a way to turn this around? I don't know. I wish there was a camp for men that we could collectively meet up and just sort of, I don't know, leave the cell phones at home and cut off the sports center and just, I don't know what the heck that would be. But somehow getting back to those masculine norms that made us what we are. I mean, you know, you throw back in the time machine, the reason that we feel pride when we make that table or bring home that buck, it's because that's what we've been doing for thousands of years. It's like, that's what we do. Yeah. You know, Adam and Eve started, and then the men took the ball and ran with it.
Yeah, no doubt about it there, John. And yeah, that's actually kind of what my vision is for the future of Vigilant Wolf, is to build some kind of events like that for men, and really with the idea of a rites of passage.
Yes.
You know, every great culture, every great society has had different rites of passage, and we still do to an extent. Like, marriage is really a rite of passage into, you know, the ceremony from being single to, you know, coming together. So we still do celebrate some different types of rites of passage, but they're very few and very limited, especially now, and we don't even really look at them that way. Mm-hmm. And I really, my desire after I get done with this move is to start to create some events that are just that, a real rite of passage, where rites of passage have always just historically been three main parts to them. You leave your home in the comforts, you face an ordeal, and then you return home a changed person.
Absolutely.
So the goal will be to create something like that. I'm kind of in the early steps of it and putting things together, but that's really the goal, will be to bring men away from the comforts. I don't think that it will be posh environment to live in. It will be difficult. It will be set up where where it will be a challenge. It will be a challenge to anybody who shows up with, you know, PT, and will be learning skills. I don't think it really, you know, there's some place in this world as grown men for games. But I think that rather than a camp, or rather than an event where we play games to challenge one another, I think having an event where men got together to learn shooting skills, or mm-hmm. archery, or land navigation, or well, you could go on and on and on, sure. John, on different skills that we have completely lost, and or even medical skills too. I think that there's a real place for that is the head of a household to know how to take care of an emergency, medical emergency in a situation. So the goal would be to have it set up like that. So you go, you get away from the comforts, you rough it. It's going to be tough. It's going to be hard, but you're going to go home having had some teachings or some training in leadership, how to lead, but at the same time leave with some skills that you are hard earned skills. So that is kind of the direction that I'm wanting to go with Vigilant Wolf, and because I don't see that out there, John. I don't see that as something that enough people are doing. And back to your other question though, of can we make a difference? I don't know that we can change everybody's mind, but if there is no chance of changing things, if there is no chance of changing a substantial group of men's idea on what it means to be a man and what it means to be a father and what it means to be a husband, and to reorganize and direct them back to taking control of that, then I'm kind of wasting my time with my podcast and what I'm doing. And I'm putting a lot of time and effort and energy into it, just as you do with your podcast, to create something that I think can have an impact. And there are a lot of other guys out there doing similar things and doing the same things. And I hope and I pray that they can reach a certain demographic, and maybe there's a demographic of men that will see what I'm doing and will kind of resonate with what I'm saying and will start to grab back that position that we held, and train up their kids in some of the ways of old, and combined in with some new thoughts and new ideas, but at the same time to take pride in where they came from and who they are and what their family's been through. And you know, I think in the past, John, everybody went through ordeals. If you lived to the ripe old age of like 30, you had probably gone through a famine, maybe survived the plague, maybe survived war. You know, you had gone through ordeals just because that's how life was. And in our modern times, in this candy land we go back to once again that we live in, if we're going to go through that type of ordeal, we almost need to create it. And that's kind of the idea behind these events, will be to really create that ordeal that can bring that change out of you, to bring you into becoming the man that you were created to be, that you should be, that you can take on that role as the husband and as the father that you were designed to take on. So that's kind of the mission and the direction that I'm wanting to take this ship. Or this dinghy, I should say, this little ship I'm steering.
I love that, man. I feel like you were reading my brain. I thought about that a long time ago. It was really weird. My wife and I, before we had our daughter, we were talking about this. And it was kind of, you know, it was before all the horrible insanity that we live in now. It was years ago. And now it's like, whoa, it's like over the top insanity now. But you know, we're talking about just that, and it links back to all that anthropology land stuff that I deal with, where you're dealing with that separation, transition, and the reintegration phases. And most other cultures do this, especially, you know, these quote-unquote third and second world cultures. That's just what they do. So, like, every culture except for Western society, you go out there and you bring back whatever. You go through a scarification or ritual, but kind of probably the more important aspect is you go out there with the kinfolk. You go out there with the elders, with the men that have done all this, and they teach you how to be a man, and you go through a rite of some sort of pain, typically, or ordeal, and then you come back, and you're like, oh, I get it now. But, I mean, I was talking about this years ago where I was like, we don't do that anymore. It's just sort of like, oh, well, you're 16. You've taken this driving class, so here's your license. And, oh, you magically turned 18, so now you're an adult, so says the state. So now you can, you know, go buy a shotgun and register or go fight in a war. And now you're 21, so magically the state bestows upon you drinking privileges and buying a pistol privileges and all this. You know, like there's nothing there where you've gone through any sort of mentoring or any of that stuff that you just talked about, or, you know, myself included. And I think that's probably another keystone of the wussification of America and the guys just having no clue what the heck's going on. Cause I think most men, even if they're getting all that leftist stuff, you know, biologically they're going, okay, I'm a man. So I need to take the head of the household. I need to be the strong fill in the blank. And then the culture saying, but wait, you need to be loving and caring and hold hands and go pick flowers. And so it's this real, I think it's a conflict within men these days. I think that's another element of the wussification. That's my own term, but yeah, you can use it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you. There's definitely a wussification going on. And I think that the reality is there needs to be a balance there.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you look at in like the warrior poet idea of like David in the Bible. I mean, that guy, they were celebrating him, you know, they were dancing in the street celebrating about Saul killing his 1,000 and David killing his tens of thousands. Mm-hmm. So this guy was like a badass warrior. There's like no way you can question his prowess on the battlefield as a commander and as a leader of his men. Not to mention, I mean, you go, there's some biblical accounts of like the men that followed him, and those guys were not going to follow after some wuss.
Exactly.
You know, these were like men that were like crazy. There's a story about the one guy, and it's just real brief, but it says he killed a lion in a pit in the snow.
No big deal. Yeah.
Right, with a spear. So, I mean, like, these guys were not like, I mean, these guys would probably make a lot of the special forces guys kind of look a little cheesy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When you're jumping down in a pit in the snow to kill a lion, I think you're certified badass at that point, John. I don't really know if we have another term in the English language to cover somebody like that.
True.
So you look at these men and they're following after David. You know that David was a man's man. There's mm-hmm. no doubt about it. They trusted him. They believed in him. They were following after him, being chased by Saul. But on the other, what seems like to us the complete opposite spectrum of David was this man writing the Psalms, playing the harp to soothe King Saul when Saul would get angry after he had killed Goliath. So you have this like what looks like to us would be the total opposite end of the spectrum of a man. But he is a great example of what it means to be that warrior poet, of finding that balance between the two, of being able to fend for yourself, take care of yourself, take care of those that are important to you, while at the same time being able to write poetry or sing songs or dance or that sort of thing. And I think that's the problem right now is we have a lot of men that are turning into that almost cartoonish, almost stereotypical fake version of what maybe society thinks that masculinity should be, that warrior that killed his 10,000, and that guy cannot relate whatsoever to the other end, maybe to his children, to his wife, to what's going on the home front, because he's so far out on that testosterone binge of trying to become this caricature of what he thinks men should be. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have far, far, far too many men that are, you know, complete and total, as you use the term, wusses, that are only in contact with their feminine side, or are only soft-spoken and are not sure of their role and not sure and always defer to their wife or to their children even for where we're going to go out to eat, or mm-hmm. or what shoes should I buy, hon? Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And because they're so far to that other end of the spectrum that they've lost an understanding of what it means to be a man. And so I think that there's a problem on both ends of the spectrum there, and we really need to fight to get back to that center point of finding that happy medium between the two, of understanding what the role is to really be a man. And I think a big part of that, though, is being able to relate to your children, or be able to understand your children, or take that time with your kids or with your wife, and be able to so that she knows that you are that man that's going to stand up for her. Your kids know that you're that guy who's going to protect them when there's a school bully, or there's a problem at school, or that there's something going on in their lives, that your home is a place of protection. That's where my dad is. Yeah. That's where he's at. I know that he's somebody that I can talk to. I know that he's somebody that I can trust. But so I think there's that happy medium in between there, that's perfection. And how we should be, and you know, and it goes back to the same thing. Jesus was the same way. A lot of people have turned Jesus into this, you know, Daisy Duke wearing, you know, hippie lispy guy. But the reality is, man, he was stirring up a lot of trouble with those Sadducees and Pharisees, the religious leaders at the time. I mean, he was going toe-to-toe with them. He was calling them names. He was calling them out on a regular basis. He was not trying to make friends with them. He knew what they stood for. He knew what he stood for, and was not afraid to, even a lot of times, embarrass them in front of other people. You know, the guy built his own whip and took that whip and, you know, turned over tables and called out the people for what they were doing in the temple. So again, you see, but at the same time, then again, you got that guy on the other end of the spectrum when the disciples were saying, hey, let's get these dirty, nasty, icky children, these street children that are trying to crowd around Jesus. You know, I think it's really interesting. We kind of clean up so many of the Bible stories because we can't relate in our culture to what things were actually like.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think at some point you got to realize that there's a little bit more, and we got to dig a little bit deeper beyond our culture and realize that just like all those children in Guatemala that used to chase after you when you went into these villages, or when you go to these orphanages or a dump or something like that to do like puppet shows or things like that, these kids were filthy, hadn't bathed. A lot of them were thieves. A lot of them were being taken advantage of in a lot of different ways. A lot of them didn't have homes. A lot of them were eating garbage. A lot of them were sick. So those were the kids that were trying to come around Jesus, right?
Mm-hmm.
The disciples were shooing away. They're like, yeah, we got to get this riffraff out of here. They probably were picking pockets and stirring up all sorts of trouble, right? You know, lice and everything. But that makes it even more beautiful what Jesus did at that point, John, because he said, nah, bring these kids over here, you know, and they sat on his lap and he talked to them. And then at the exact same story, John, you have him bringing these undesirable, unwanted, filthy, dirty children to come sit on his lap, and so he can love on them and show them what love is really about. And then he gives out that kind of cryptic warning of, you know, if anybody does anything to these children, you'd be better off putting a millstone around his neck and getting thrown into the sea. So you kind of see, like, they're at that same point. You see, like, the two different sides, or that balance of being, you know, a warrior poet versus, you know, one side of the spectrum or the other. So I think that we got a lot of work to do. I think that there are a lot of men out there trying to do similar missions or a similar idea to what I'm trying to do. And man, I hope that they all succeed, because there's room for anybody and everybody that would want to get involved in this movement to to get men straightened out, because as the leader of the home, and it's one of those things where I believe, John, that's who you are by default, is mm-hmm. the leader of the home.
Yeah.
So whether you like it or not, whether you feel like it that day or not, or whether you're tired or whether you're sore or whether you're frustrated or stressed, it really doesn't matter. You're still the leader, and it is up to you to drive the direction that your family goes in. And I think that all of us need help and direction in that area, and always can use some different thoughts and different ideas on how we can best do that. But I think that whether we like it or not, whether we feel like it or not, that's our role, and we need to grab onto it, we need to embrace it, and we need to do the best that we can given the tools that we have. So that's kind of my idea behind what I'm doing, John, because like I said, if we can't make some changes somewhere, John, I think that I'm just kind of wasting my time here and wasting my breath. I really believe that we can make an impact and we can make a difference in the way that men are looking at their role.
I certainly hope so. Sort of like we talked about before we got on air, if nothing else, I love connecting out to people like yourself, and it gives me personally hope, and I hope it gives everyone that listens to this show and yours as well hope. It's easy to get caught up in like, well, you're looking at all this media stuff and it must be just me. I must be the only crazy guy out there that thinks that all this insanity is insane. Like, I must be wrong. It's kind of like what we were talking about before with guys getting these mixed messages where you're supposed to be Rambo on one day, and then you're supposed to be the Hallmark Channel guy the next day. You know, like most guys, I think that's why they're doing this head thing. Like, I don't know what to do. We're just going to look down and hope somebody else will tell us what to do, which isn't the right move, but you know, I hope both of our shows can help people at least not feel so isolated and so alone.
Yeah, I agree, John, and that's why I like what you're doing here. You saw an issue, you saw a place where you could make an impact, make a difference, and rather than just kind of giving it off to somebody else to take care of, you know, you said, you know what, I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to start a podcast and get my thoughts and my opinions out there. And if it resonates with some people and can make a difference and make an impact on our culture right now, great. And, you know, I think the more people that can get out and do things like that, get out and voice their opinion on a blog or a podcast or a YouTube channel, or even if it's just get out in your community and get to know your neighbors and get to, or, you know, get involved in a church or your community center or politics in your small town or village or things like that, I think that we can make an impact, because I think that the reality is a lot of people are just kind of sitting on their hands, unsure of what it is that they believe or what it is that they stand for, because the media is really pushing a certain agenda out there and a certain direction, a way of thinking out there. And I really believe that it's just a very vocal, very powerful minority that believes that way. I believe that the majority of people in this country really probably, if they had to decide between two sides, would probably side with your thoughts and my thoughts on the majority of what's going on.
Yeah.
But I think that what happens is when the other side is so loud that they start to think that they are the only crazy ones. And I think that the worst thing that could possibly happen to that agenda is for more and more people like you or I to get out and voice an opinion that is really not radical, but is bold enough, and we frame it in a bold enough way so that people realize more and more that, hey, I'm not all alone. I'm not by myself here. My ideas aren't crazy. There are other people that think the same way I do. And in that way, you can unite. And I believe that for a lot of people, when you do feel isolated or feel alone in your thoughts, you're a lot less likely to vocalize them. You're a lot less likely to be bold enough to say what you feel like needs to be said. But the more that you realize that there's other people out there that view things the same way you do or have similar ideas, the more likely you are to be bold enough to stand up for what you believe in and what you think is the right thing, or to voice an opinion that maybe isn't popular in the media and make people have to rethink maybe where they stand. So like what you're doing here, I think is great. I think it's very, very important in helping unite people and helping people realize that there are more of us out here with these thoughts than they want us to believe.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. I'm so happy for what you're doing as well. So if you get this this program off, I'm down. I'm going to go to your, I don't know what you want to call it, not a camp, but some sort of men's transitional phases experience or something.
Yeah, exactly. We're working on a name too, because like you said, I don't really want to call it a camp because it's kind of different than that.
Yeah.
So I'll have to get my marketing team on it.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, that's the only limitation for folks like myself and you. We don't have those CNN dollars and the George Soros funding, so.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't know what to do with all that coin.
Me neither. Well, where can people find everything you? How can they help you? How can they follow you? What can they do to support you?
You can go to vigilantwolf.com, and really the mission behind vigilantwolf.com is to equip men to prepare, defend, and lead at home and in their communities. And on that website, you can find different types of gear, from holsters, belts, first aid gear, to articles written by some friends of the podcast, some of the regular guests. And you can get access to full archive of Ever Vigilant right there from vigilantwolf.com. So that's a good way to and you can, you know, send out an email from there. And I'm pretty active on Instagram. Okay. So you can find me on Instagram at the Ever Vigilant or at Vigilant Wolf.
That sounds great. Yeah, I've been looking at the shop page. I need to talk to you about that. I got to get that off the ground on my own site, but
yeah,
I like
it. Yeah, no problem, John.
All right. Well, in case you missed all of that, you can definitely check it out at anomicage.com. I will have all of Joe's information there. And I haven't tried to do this, but the last few guests have set it up so nicely. You cannot do everything, but you absolutely can do something. Just like our guest today has discussed and many others in the past. That's the game plan here. I'm not doing this just so you can sit back and watch me. Please take the helm, take your own ship, do the work. So yes, you can't do everything, but you can do something. Until next time, be safe out there, and we will see you soon on the Anomic Age. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to the Anomic Age, a John Age project. For past shows, further info, and to comment, go to anomicage.com. That's anomicage.com. Till next time, thank you for listening to the Anomic Age. I'm gonna go get some more money.